If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Let's talk about James Craig, the alleged killer dentist. We've looked at the mask, the method, the manipulation. Now it's time to step back and ask the bigger question. Who is James Craig really? Because what happened here wasn't just a betrayal. Or even just a murder, allegedly. If the allegations hold, this was a multi-stage, calculated, emotionally anesthetized attack carried out by someone who knew what he was doing and knew how to look good doing it. I'm going to strip away the last layer here, the psychology beneath the surface, the wiring behind the charm, the disorder behind the clean white coat, because when somebody allegedly poisons their spouse over the course of days, pretends to be caring while she's slipping into a coma, and then writes a deepfake suicide script from jail, you're not just looking at a criminal, you're looking at pathology. With me is psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, and we're pulling together everything we've discussed, not to diagnose Craig officially, but to map the territory. What kind of traits line up with his behavior? Narcissism? Psychopathy? Something more complex? And how do you identify people like this before they escalate? We'll talk about narcissistic collapse, it's when someone's sense of control, identity, or status is threatened and they lash out in destructive, often calculated ways. We'll look at how fantasy thinking, power dynamics, and public image maintenance all contribute to someone who's capable of not just committing murder, but allegedly doing it in such a clinically detached and self-protective way. And most importantly, we'll talk about the kind of profile means for people around them. Who is this guy? Their families, coworkers, and communities. How do you recognize this? And how can we stop confusing nice guy with safe guy? Because the scariest predators aren't the ones who come in angry. They're the ones who smile when they're doing it. Let's build the profile. Let's go here. When we break this down, I want to ask you first, before we talk more about James Craig, have you had a situation in your career, maybe early on? Because imagine earlier on, it's more difficult, or you're easy to fall into the trap of someone who is a narcissist and a manipulator that is acting like they want to get help, but they're just using it as the echo chamber to hear themselves hear about how great they are. What is that like? And can you give me any examples of how you eventually break through that? Like, what are some of the signs where you go, oh, I really thought this person was this for a while, but this showed me that from like a clinical standpoint?
It usually comes up when there's some kind of external information. And at that point, you know, you hear about somebody being arrested, some kind of a violent altercation that they have. Yeah, I've got stories. And so how do you then deal with, okay, we've got to move toward a shift here. I'm not just going to validate what a wonderful person you are. We're going to have to talk about these other things that happened. And did you have a contribution to this rather than just being a victim? And so you have to kind of shift gears. And at that point, that's when most of them will drop therapy and you become unpopular in their eyes because you just didn't adore them. Now, I've got a really funny story. When I was practicing in a very small town, I was seeing one gentleman who clearly had some psychopathic traits. He had been in prison. He was very manipulative, and I could see these things up front. And he was difficult to work with, as these folks are, but I was kind of plugging away slowly with it and seeing if we could get any insight and get him to take some responsibility. And he was on the dating apps. And I was also seeing another young woman who was on the dating apps, and she was a lovely, delightful person. And she came in one day talking about this wonderful new man she met, and she mentioned his first name, which was rather unique, and she mentioned his profession, which was rather unique. He was a pot grower at the time. Uh-huh. But she just thought he was a great guy. And I had an oh shit response because he was also my client. And I so wanted to grab her by the shoulders and say, run the other way. But of course, confidentiality, you can't do that. And that was quite an ethical dilemma. And then he came in talking about her. And before long, they had been out drinking and they each confided in each other, well, I go to therapy. And then they each shared who their therapist was. And they figured out that they were both my clients. So, yeah, that was one where I just had to really reinforce with her the idea of being cautious, having good judgment, but I could never directly tell her anything about him, even though I felt very protective of her and sure wanted to. But that may be my next book someday, being a therapist in a very small town, the dilemmas that happened. I've got a lot of stories like that.
I bet, because, I mean, it was probably somewhat of a therapy island where there wasn't a lot of folks to go to. So
exactly.
If somebody did want to do it, your odds of crossover are pretty high.
Very high. And when I saw a lot of children when my kids were young in the 90s, I was treating lots of kids. And when my son was in high school, there were two different girls that he was dating mm-hmm. that he brought home to meet mom. And they said, you were my therapist when I was in third grade. And I'm like, hi.
Get away from my son.
I know way more about you and your family than I really need to know. And it was very awkward. And of course, if they hadn't have said anything, I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
But they both came in and said, oh, hi, you mm-hmm. were my therapist. So, yeah, it's much more comfortable in Portland where we've got, you know, 600,000 people. I'm not having that crossover. All
sure.
the time.
Did they continue to date the the young mm-hmm. women that mm-hmm. you knew far too much about?
I knew far too much. Is grandpa still a pedophile? You know,
oh,
it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
God. That's a weird one. That's a good one. That's would be great for that book, Siobhan. That would be a great book. It really
would. It was really why I moved to a large city. It's like, you know, all these years in this tiny little town, I've got to get out of here.
You chose
Portland. I couldn't vote for a politician in town.
Sure,
knew all their sordid stories.
Yeah.
It's like, I just couldn't handle it after a while.
Let me ask you this one. It's just kind of a hypothetical. From what we know about him, I mean, if Craig sat in your office today, what would you be looking for clinically?
I would be hoping there would be some depression, because that would be at least a sign that he's got one foot in reality at this point. but I might not be seeing it. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be seeing this person who's still maintaining this grandiose image, who sees himself as a victim. And it's all so unfair, and he's been set up, and of course he didn't do any of this. That would be my guess. Mm-hmm. And if you called him out on why were you ordering cyanide, you know, from Amazon or whatever the heck it was, arsenic, cyanide, oleander leaves, all the things mm-hmm. that he was, you know, looking into, that there would be an excuse for it.
Yeah.
And so I would have to keep going back to, but here's the evidence. Here's the evidence, here's the evidence, and see if you can get a crack in the story. And then if you get a crack in the story, you would probably get some kind of faux tears, you know, role playing. And again, it's designed to manipulate the therapist and hook you in.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who, there's a lot of things after the fact, after this crime took place, that has dug him an even deeper hole. And that's where I'm thinking, like, this guy is not operating in reality anymore. I feel mm-hmm. like there's some delusion stuff going on here. I mean, mm-hmm. he, beyond the asking the daughter to create a deep fake video of mom confessing that she's going to kill herself, he went to an inmate who's now testified in court against him, asking him to help create or to get to some of the friends of his wife so they could tell stories that she was suicidal. Also wanting to put a hit out on the prosecutor, offering $20,000 for the hit on the I mean, these are very grandiose requests of just another inmate in jail. And at first it was just hearsay. Now there's a letter and it's in his handwriting, and it's very well written. It's not written as one would, you know, guess out of a prison where it's more of, you know, a fourth grade writing level. This is written like a doctor. It's written very well, and in his tone and in his manner. What does that tell you about his mindset today, that he thinks just requesting these sort of things are going to be successful, number one, or number two, that they're even going to happen?
It's crazy. And is it delusional? Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. We don't have any other evidence of psychosis, you know, hallucinations, mm-hmm. auditory, hearing voices, nothing like that. So probably not, you know, a true psychosis, but it's not grounded in reality, and it shows really poor judgment, as so much of what he's done shows mm-hmm. really poor judgment. And I think it's his way of doubling down on a very pathological defense mechanism that ultimately has got him in prison, you know, and he's going to be there forever, it looks like. So why would a person take it to this extent? This is a really twisted guy. He does not perceive anything like the rest of us.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. The prism is off, and that's why mm-hmm. none of this makes sense. Does someone like that, I mean, is it possible someone like this really believes his own things that he's saying out there? Because it was noted, Eric Faddis, who's one of our contributors, has been in the courtroom. He noted that when the letter came up, when it wasn't just hearsay and it was like, look, this is in your writing, this is your own words, this is all that, he seemed to deflate from being kind of a verbose character in court, like, I'm strong, I'm interacting with my counsel, I'm part of this, to, oh, shit. I mean, that certainly shows some knowledge that he got caught. But could there be a on and off switch here where he goes in and out of believing he's justified and right in this to, the emperor has no clothes on?
I think he always want more on this. He's right, because that's the story he tells himself. But he knows that in the eyes of the rest of the world, it's not okay. And so it's this constant, what can I do to get away with this? And the story he tells himself justifies it, which twisted.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It will never make sense. It's like in the Koberger case at the end of the day, it's like, why? What's the motive? And with people like this, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't mm-hmm. make sense. It's a broken prism. Why are things coming out of this? Because the prism's broken. There's a giant crack mm-hmm. right there. That's why the mm-hmm. colors and the rainbows are flipping out in different mm-hmm. ways than you'd expect them to. Mm-hmm. It's broke. That's the answer. And that's the answer sometimes. So what kind of man allegedly poisons his wife over time, plays the grieving husband, then tries to fabricate her suicide from a jail cell? The kind that doesn't just need to control the people around him. He needs to control the story from beginning to end. As Siobhan clearly broke down today, this isn't just about one bad act. It's about a pattern, a way of thinking, a personality structure that values appearances over empathy, self-preservation over accountability, and dominance over connection. It's narcissism, yes, but weaponized. It's control, but dressed up as care. And it's the kind of pathology that's harder to spot because it doesn't explode. It seduces. It convinces. It smiles. And that makes it far more dangerous than the chaotic, angry types we're usually taught to fear. What makes someone like Craig so chilling, if the allegations are true, is the fact that he could carry out an act like this while living a completely convincing double life. He wasn't spiraling visibly. He was functioning, high functioning, showing up to work, sending texts, managing optics, all while allegedly timing out doses and cover-up tactics like it was on the checklist of his calendar, right next to the sugar babies. And that's the takeaway here, that predators like this aren't mythical. They exist. They hold jobs. They raise families. They charm neighbors. And when they strike, it's usually only then that people say, "I never saw it coming." But like Siobhan does, behavioral experts, forensic clinicians, they see the patterns early. And that's the entire point of an episode like this. Not just to understand what happened, but to ask how we can prevent the next one. What are the warning signs? What are the moments we overlook? Because the person doing them is too successful or too nice or too well-respected? So we leave you here with the clarity. The mask was a lie. The poison was a strategy. The deepfake was a final act of control. And the man behind all of it? That's the part we're finally starting to clearly see. Thanks, Siobhan Scott, for helping us walk through this. And for all of you for listening. Be sure to check out Siobhan's book. Her new memoir is called Nightbird. It's available wherever books are sold. And The Minds of Mass Killers, also available wherever books are sold as well. Very good reads. Let me know your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube, if that's where you are. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and you will find us there. Hit subscribe and then comment so we know what your thoughts are on the case. And the same means on the podcast platforms, take us with us wherever you go, audio-wise. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi there and find us as well. Until next time, for all of us here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.